Landmark Pacific is known for their outstanding steel buildings and general contracting. But did you know that they're also a fantastic choice to maintain your existing building? When new construction isn't an option, maintaining your existing pre-engineered steel building is absolutely imperative. Incorrect materials can greatly reduce the life of your metal roof. For metal re-roofs, repairs, or additions and remodels, call the experts at Landmark Pacific, 503-743-3256. That's 503-743-3256.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
If there's one thing in life that's consistent, it's that government is consistently wrong. In the late 1700s, you had Thomas Malthus predicting the dangers of overpopulation, which became British government dogma that population would exceed the means of agricultural production and lead to starvation. They were wrong, because Malthus, a preacher and mathematician and not a farmer, didn't take into account advances in farming technology and advances in science and improved understanding of plant biology. And yet Malthus's opinion has dominated Western government thinking for over two centuries. The left wholeheartedly believes it, thinking that some 6 billion of us just need to go away. The Industrial Revolution. Government experts believed people were going to be put out of work as machines did what people used to do, and not only do what they used to do, but do it faster and better. But the exact opposite happened. More people went to work than ever before, and at higher wages than ever before, which meant they had more money to spend, which meant even more businesses could open, and on and on and on. These are just two examples of why government is so often wrong about so many things. It's why they're slow to react to advances in technology because, like Malthus, who is no farmer, government bureaucrats are making decisions and recommendations about things they don't fully understand. It's why the market, which makes millions of buying and selling decisions every day, is more efficient than any government bureaucrat could ever be. This is precisely why socialism always fails. Markets are always better than bureaucrats. But that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be some sort of control, because a market running amok can cause damage because within any market, there are potentially some bad actors who will, can, and do exploit things to their own advantage. Take, for example, a relatively new phenomenon, computerized algorithm-controlled stock trades. Basically, these are computer programs that watch the market to buy or sell based on a set of criteria. But here's the thing. They can make millions of trades in seconds before you can even refresh the Dow Jones webpage. While these trader bots have a lot of potential, they also represent the potential for tremendous problems. And the potential for problems are only going to get worse due to the rise of new technologies that will make things even faster and more connected than ever before, especially things like 5G technology. And who controls that new technology will control the new future that is coming. And right now, there is a war between China and the U.S. for that future. I'd like to welcome now Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. He's an author and consultant to Congress, the CIA, FBI, and other government agencies on matters of cybersecurity, and he's got his own show now on Blaze TV. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be here.
Yeah, talk to our audience a little bit about your new show there on Blaze.
Yeah, well, we launched with CRTV, and CRTV merged with the Blaze. This is the first show ever to document the economic war we're facing. It gives everybody, every show, a bad, good, beautiful view. So we talk about a problem, we talk about things you can do about the problem, and then we love to end with something that's positive and upbeat. We don't want to just dump bad news on people. And then we give a battle plan that every subscriber can download that covers the show in detail and has practical things to do. And all of that can be found starting at economicwarroom.com.
All right. And I know that people can subscribe to that, too. And I think you have a deal right now. You get like 1 month free. Is that correct?
You know, 1 month free and you get a discount. And yeah. start at Economic War Room. We'll always post the best deal that you can get. But you not only get us, you get Mark Levin, and you get Glenn Beck, and you get Phil Robertson, and Steve Day. So you get a whole, it is, I believe, the best platform for conservative thought.
Well, cool. So we have seen some really wild, wild swings in the stock market starting about 6 months or so ago. And I mean, even right before Christmas, it plunged 500 points Christmas Eve, only to skyrocket in a record-breaking single-day biggest gain ever, 1,039 points the day after Christmas. What do you attribute these wild roller coasters that we're seeing here? I mean, could it be manipulation?
Well, let's start with the fact that the stock market has gone up pretty much straight up for 10 years. The Dow Jones Industrial Average bottomed at 660 in March of 2009, and here we are almost exactly 10 years later. And at one point, just a couple of months ago, the Dow was 26,800. So, you know, it gained 20,000 points in 10 years, which is kind of remarkable.
Yeah.
It was pretty straight up. And there's a whole lot of factors at work here. You know, when President Trump was elected, the stock market went up, and he pointed to that. And he said, look, this is proof that I'm successful as a president. But the Federal Reserve started raising interest rates, and that added some volatility to the market. And we were in a trade war with China, and that adds some volatility to the market. And we've gone a long way up. But there is no question in my mind that there is additional manipulation taking place beyond those basic normal factors.
And when you say manipulation, are you talking about it's manipulation just for personal gain, that, you know, somebody's trying out there to essentially game the system? Or are you talking manipulation in the sense that this is economic warfare from a hostile entity?
Well, let's put it this way. We found without question that there was foreign manipulation in the 2008 time frame, right entering into the election. There is no doubt that our markets can be manipulated using cyber means. An example, in 2013, the Syrian Electronic Army hacked the Associated Press Twitter feed. They put out a fake tweet. The trading algorithms picked that up, and they dropped the stock market $200 billion in a matter of seconds. We know that manipulation can take place. We know that we've had flash crashes, and no one denies that there's the possibility. We even have Russian spies who were caught in this country, and talking to their handler back in Moscow was telling them, learn how to manipulate the stock market using exchange-traded funds. So we know that there is an ability to manipulate, and there's a desire to manipulate. Now, if President Trump says, I'm proof of my success is the stock market's going up, and the Chinese say, we've got to win this trade war, we've got to get the president to back down, of course they would be interested in manipulating the stock market. They've even accused us of doing that to their stock market. So I have zero doubt that the Chinese are aware, know how, and very likely, this is where I'm not 100% certain, but it is very likely to me, it's only logical, that they would be manipulating in the stock market. They hack everything else. Why would they avoid that?
Sure. Let's go ahead and take a break there. This is going to get into some pretty big, juicy stuff, I think. So let's go and take a break there. Come back. We'll have more with Kevin Freeman, expert on cybersecurity and financial terrorism. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Kevin Freeman. He's an expert on financial terrorism. He has some books out there that you can find out more about. Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And also has another book out there, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. You know, in that last segment, one of the things that really impresses me, terrifies me really in many ways, is how few people are aware that this kind of manipulation, A, has happened in the past, and it's also very likely to happen again. Does it surprise you how few people? I mean, you talk to financial people all the time. Is that the same thing that they get? Is it just people just aren't aware that this sort of thing has happened and is likely to happen?
Well, absolutely. People are not aware that it has happened. They're certainly not aware that it could happen. And we put confidence and trust in lots of things. When you get an automobile, the average person doesn't know how the car works. They don't understand the internal combustion engine. They don't understand the electronics. The same with an airplane. But they've worked for us all this time, and therefore we assume they work, and we're satisfied with them. stock market has worked generally most of the time. You make an investment, you buy a company. If the company prospers, the stock goes up. But it doesn't always work that way. And right now, we're more vulnerable than ever because 80% of the trading on the stock exchange, 80% is algorithmic, high-frequency trading, and no human is actually involved in placing the trade.
Wow. I'd like to come back to that because I think that's so critical to what's going on. You mentioned the fact that Trump's success is so tied into the stock market. That's been going on for a number of years now, especially when it started that climb after 2001 or so, and it just kind of kept going up and up and up. I think that's a mistake in many ways, simply because it's such a single gauge of a much larger economy. I mean, when you look at all the fundamentals that's happening here in our economy, you've got very low unemployment, you've got a lot of companies moving back to the U.S., you've got all of these trade deals that are going on. But that stock market number, I think that's – people seem to gravitate towards that simply because it's a number and it's kind of easy to digest. Well, it went up so many points or it's going down so many points. What are some other indicators that people really ought to be looking at?
Well, it's a number, and it's an A number that directly impacts them.
Yes.
Whereas you look at the unemployment numbers are irrelevant to most people unless, of course, they're out of a job, and then it makes a difference. But some of the other statistics that we've seen, economic growth, what is the gross domestic product of the country? And that's an important one because highly regulated economies do not grow as rapidly as those with less regulation. So one of the things the president has done is he's reduced the amount of regulation that's being thrust on our nation. So the Obama recovery was one of the weakest recoveries coming out of a major recession in history. And we averaged about 2% annual growth. This country ought to be growing 3% or more, and President Trump is doing a lot of things to do that. So GDP is another measure that you can look at, and it's not easily manipulated like a stock market might be.
Yeah. So getting back to this notion that we have seen manipulation in the past and that it's possible for this to happen again, the types of manipulation that we see, those were countries that were doing that or some of these large organizations. Is it possible that single individuals, and I'm thinking of somebody like a George Soros, could they go out and manipulate the market for gain, either personal or political? Or is that simply too big for a single or small group of billionaire investors to pull off? I mean, you need that large organization.
Well, there's a couple of answers there that really point out the truth. One of them is George Soros became famous when he broke the Bank of England.
Yes. Yes.
He was worth about $1 billion then, but he took on the Bank of England and won and made $1 billion in a single transaction, basically. Mm. And so, no, the system is not so big that it can't be pushed or led or manipulated in some way. And the second one is, when they finally arrested someone for the flash crash that happened, I think, in 2010, where the market just inexplicably dropped, it was an individual with his parents in a row house outside of London. Mm. He wasn't worth a huge fortune. He was not a nation state. He was actually involved in spoofing trades. And so that case was brought with a straight face by the U.S. government. So I have to say, if that could happen, then absolutely individuals can make a huge difference, even with small amounts of money. But we're not talking about individuals. Sometimes we're talking about Vladimir Putin, who has an estimated $200 billion net worth, 200 times what Soros had when he broke the Bank of England, or we're talking about the Chinese, who have trillions of dollars at their disposal. There's a lot of money out there. There are drug cartels. There are political parties. There are a lot of people out there that would like to have their ability to manipulate American society. And one of the ways that you do that is you manipulate the stock market.
Well, that's really scary that not only are we talking about like the Chinese Red Army that could come in there and manipulate things, but just these single individuals. And as you say, that they don't necessarily have to be worth a tremendous amount of money. In terms of the stock market, because if it could be manipulated so easily by a single person or, and such, but that really seems to be about the only place for people to put their money if they really want to make some money. You can't just put money into a savings account anymore. You've got to. It's almost like you're being forced into the stock market. What are some other areas that people ought to be putting some of their monies? I mean, if we're looking at a potential manipulation here, where are some of the safer places to put money and still make money?
Well, and let me back up and say that I would not suggest that the stock market is a terrible place to invest money. Remember, it's a market of stocks, and you're sure. buying shares in individual companies, and they do get manipulated. And so you step back and you see a very free market person looking at the stock market, and they would say, if somebody manipulates it, the market will find its right price eventually. Mm-hmm. That just creates an opportunity. So you see a stock that's false, like in the flash crash, there were stocks that were in the flash crash. The Accenture, I think, was one that all of a sudden, you know, was trading for a penny. Who doesn't wish they had bought at that moment, because it did find the right price eventually? So, you know, I wouldn't avoid the stock market.
No,
I would just make sure that you talk to the right advisor, you have the right individual selection. But I am concerned about the index funds. Everybody's being told the best thing you can do is put all your money in an index fund, and over time you'll win and you'll do better. And there's a historical truth to that. But if everybody's investing only in the index fund, who's the person that is stepping out there and buying the individual companies when they get mispriced? And so we lose that pricing ability of the market if the market becomes just one item and not hundreds or thousands of stocks.
Right. Okay, let's go and take a break there. We're talking today to Kevin Freeman about what's going on in the markets coming up when nanoseconds count. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to Kevin Freeman. He's one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. He has a show on Blaze TV, and to learn more about Economic War Room, you can visit economicwarroom.com, and of course, we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And Kevin, this is somewhat terrifying, our discussion here today, that single individuals might really be able to manipulate the stock market. But it even gets more scary when you look at some of these potentially massive manipulations with these artificial intelligence trades. How much of these big swings in the market that we've been seeing lately might be are likely the result of some of these computer tradings? I mean, these trader bots, which are basically pre-programmed to dump or buy big chunks when certain triggers occur in the market and do so faster than humans ever could.
Well, 80% of the trading in the stock market today is directly related to an artificial intelligence program of some type. It is the vast majority of trading. People get swamped by it. And he who controls the trading algorithms, therefore, controls the market.
Yes.
The problem is the trading algorithms can be poorly written. They could have been hacked. They reflect failures at some point. So we actually did a piece on this called Market Terminator, which is the idea that, you know, Skynet has taken over our markets and they may be destroying our wealth. And it really is a concern, because there's no real way to go back and figure out where the problem is and fix it, especially if we don't have individual investors picking up the bargains that are created from the mispricings.
Talk to us a little bit about these trader bots, because there probably are some people out there that aren't really familiar with what these things are and how they work and what exactly they do.
Well, we have what allows for algorithmic trading is a couple things. One is the speed of the marketplace and the latency that people are trying to exploit. And so a company is going to locate as close to the stock exchange as they can. They don't want to have an order being placed in Kansas City and then have it, you know, over the telephone line or even over fiber optic. It takes longer than if you have a machine that's located right next to the stock exchange. And to illustrate that, I want to tell you how far things have come. I had the opportunity to speak with a friend of mine who was a stock broker in 1963 in November in Dallas. And there was a big parade going on. President Kennedy was coming through Dallas. He had the open car. We've all seen the pictures of it. And he was waving. And he looked out the window and he saw panic, sirens. He heard all of these things. He walked into the conference room of his office at the brokerage firm and he said, "Hey, is anybody here? Can you think of anything good happening with all those sirens and all that chaos down the street?" And nobody had any positive that they could say of it. So he called New York and said, "Sell, sell, 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 sell." And he sold right before the announcement came out that President Kennedy had been shot. The stock market tumbled as a result. That is how much time there was in 1963. In 2008 and 19 now, you don't have that time. Before you even are aware something's happened, there's a trade that's taken place. If it shows up on the internet in any one of these blogs or posts or news sites or whatever, there's a computer that's searching it and it sees a trigger word, inverted yield curve, and the next thing you know, it's executed a massive sell program of securities that that trader may or may not have. They may be short selling securities, but it shows up as a sell order, and it could trigger a panic where people start selling because, wow, there's a huge block coming selling. They know something I don't know. In this case, it may be something they know because it was on a website somewhere. It's not because somebody was sitting in Dallas that heard the screams and saw the sirens.
Hmm. Well, and I think that's an important point for people to understand or to remember anyway in all of this is that people, or in this case computers, can make boatloads of money when the market not just goes up, but when it goes down too. And the computers don't necessarily care if the market gains or loses as long as they end up making money on the other side of things. But, I mean, do the people controlling these computers at all, do they necessarily care one way or the other if the market crashes so long as they make their millions or billions?
No, that's exactly right. And in 1987, we saw the early stages of computer trading. They called it program trading at the time, and it was portfolio insurance. And so there were computers that were programmed, if these things happen in the economy, then you sell. And on an individual level, they could be entirely right, and you sell because the stock market does this and this and this, and the economic statistics do this. But when you have thousands of those computers selling at the same time, it creates a panic, and that's what caused the 1987 market crash.
Hmm.
So we had a massive drop at the time, the worst one day loss since the Great Depression, and that happened because the computer doesn't care if it's going up or going down. It just cares. Here's my program. I need to execute it, and in that case, it was to sell and get out of holdings. And the liquidity dried up, and people were panicked. They had, and I was there for that one, and nobody knew what was going on or what we should be doing about it.
Mm.
And right now, it's 1,000 times faster, maybe a million times faster, and it's far more sophisticated, and people have even less knowledge of what's behind it.
Well, I was talking with Cliff Tarpey. He's a talk radio show host on one of the stations that we air on, and I was talking to him about all of this, and one of the things that really fascinates him is how quickly so many of these things operate. Literally nanoseconds can count. In terms of getting your computer to make those trades faster than the other ones, I mean, is there any kind of manipulation even just within that they can sneak in these orders before the next one? I mean, how does that all work?
Yeah, well, the two things. You have to have a faster system, and you have to be closer to the exchange.
Hmm.
And so people are buying. It's a technology war, in a sense,
wow.
And they try and get as close to the exchange as they can. And then you want the best programmers. Problem is, the programmers that you hire, if they are some way conflicted, let's say you could put it, foreign government could pick a programmer, send them in, and send them to work for Goldman Sachs, and the next thing you know, they've hacked the trading algorithms. Or if you even just know what the trading algorithms are and what the triggers are, then you could go out and create those triggers. So it creates a lot of nonsense. And you'll see this impacting the market because have you ever noticed that you have a recovery, you have a downturn one day, but
yes,
the full next day is before you have the recovery. It comes, you know, in Christmas Eve and the day after Christmas kind of thing. It comes New Year's Eve, the reason for that is the system has breaks that are put in it.
Uh-huh.
And the brakes, if you move the market more than a certain percentage or move a stock more than a certain percentage, then they shut down some of these trading activity. And so what happens is the Dow drops 600 points and it stays down all 600 points all day. And then, you know, 48 hours later, all of a sudden the market wakes up and the program switched to the other side and you're up 600 points. Wow. It's like, why? Why is that happening? That's wow. Because of the breaks in the system, the way that it's put in.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and take a break there. It's not at all terrifying, is it? So everybody stay with us. We'll have more with Kevin Freeman after this. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talk today to Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. He has some books out there, Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And he also has another book, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Attack, Economic Attack. And boy, if you have heard our previous segments, you certainly know that it is certainly potentially coming. One of the questions my producer had off air there is, okay, so who has their fingers on the trigger on all of these AI bots that are out there doing all these tradings?
Well, the scary part is, in a lot of cases, there's no one who has their finger on the trigger. It's all programmed in. The programmers designed it for automatic responses because a human sitting there could not move quickly enough to take advantage of this. So it's the machines themselves at this point. Although the humans can alter the programming, they can turn the machine off. Once that machine is on and it's running, there's not necessarily a human being that's making that decision.
Wow. So in terms of any kind of safeguards on this, you mentioned that there's these breaks and all of that. Are those things that the government has tried to install, or are these the stock markets themselves instituting those?
Well, we used to have a rule. It was called the uptick rule, and it was pretty simple. It said you can't sell a stock short. That means that you're betting that's going down. You don't own that. You borrow the shares and sell. You can't sell a stock short unless the last trade was up. And that worked from it was put in by Joe Kennedy at the SEC in the 1930s, and it lasted until 2007. And we really didn't have a stock market upset in there that period of the likes of the Great Depression or the likes that we had in 2008 during that period. But once they removed that, the high-frequency trading programs were then free to do a blitzkrieg bottom-line sell. So I brought this up. A lot of other people that have studied this brought it up and said, hey, put the uptick rule back in. The SEC decided not to put the uptick rule back in, but they put circuit breakers in. And so they're like an uptick rule, so that if the market drops a certain percentage, it's a circuit breaker. We're just going to time out the machines and we're going to let the market kind of settle. That's what they substitute. I think the original uptick rule was far better. Leon Cooperman was recently on CNBC explaining why he thought it was far better. I think Jim Cramer and others thought it was better. It's better for the individual investor, but it just hammers the ability of a program to actually blitzkrieg down a market or blitzkrieg down a stock. So the traders, the high-frequency traders, do not want that, and they've lobbied hard with the SEC to prevent it from ever being brought back.
Well, in terms of the upticks and all that, how much of the AI, because, you know, the concern is always the crash, where you've got somebody that's out there trying to manipulate things and, you know, like China or Russia trying to bring down the market. In terms of those circuit breakers, are they geared just for the downturns, or are they for the upticks as well?
They work on both sides. So,
they do.
So that if market goes up too much, that there's a timeout for. So they work on both directions. But here's the problem. The problem is that there are real people with real investments that are retiring that get caught in all of this rapid back and forth swing and fight on the market, and that's not right. And the second problem is that the American people tend to gauge their mood by their wealth at times, and so you can manipulate the people. We saw, for example, USA Today did a study before the last election. It's just factual. If going into an election, the White House in power you see a rapid decline or a crash or a big loss, the party in power in the White House loses power. And if you see the market stable and growing and strong, they have a good chance of retaining power. And our enemies know this. They know that if they could cause a stock market crash right before the midterm elections, whoa, wait a minute. What did we just see in the midterm elections? We saw the market, which had gone straight up, all of a sudden start turning down in October and November and December, and we had one of the worst fourth quarters that we've had in decades. Right around the timing of the election. Does that mean that someone was trying to manipulate the election? I don't know, but people are finally admitting that foreign powers do attempt to manipulate elections, and I believe they do. And we know factually that they know how to manipulate the stock market, and we know factually that one levers the other, that if you control the stock market, you can control the outcome of an election. So that just opens us up to all kinds of new vulnerabilities, far beyond buying fake Facebook pages and things like that.
Wow. So in terms of the other thing that is going on right now, because you've got the Fed out there, and Trump was trying to say a lot of what's happening with the stock market is attributable to the Fed raising these interest rates. Do you put any credence in that, or is it, you know, maybe some of the other manipulations that we've talked about?
Oh, absolutely, there's credence in that. There's the stock market is a very complex thing. And there are a lot of things going on. We've gone 10 years with bull market gains, and so it's due for a correction in a bear market, and that's normal. And you don't say, oh, it's being manipulated. Well, it sometimes does go down. And at the end of a too low for too long interest rates, and you start raising rates, you're creating competition for stocks. If you can get a riskless 10-year treasury bond that pays you 3% or higher, there are a lot of people who say, I don't need to take the risk in the stock market. I'm willing to put my money in that bond. So yes, it has an impact. And yes, the Federal Reserve looks at how the stock market's reacting, and they comment on it occasionally. Sometimes they'll raise rates because they think the market's going to say that they don't look at those things would be naive. They do look at those things. And the current Fed chairman, Powell, he was appointed by President Trump, but he looks at the economy, and it looked really strong. And then he saw the stock market, and the stock market was looking weak. And he said, hey, look, we will adjust our Fed hike, rate hike, based on whether the economy is strong, the markets, we'll take it all into account. And that calmed the market because they thought he was just going to raise it and raise it and raise it. And in that environment, stock markets generally turn down.
Yeah. Okay, let's go and take a break there. We'll continue this with Kevin Freeman, one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. Stay with us.
Food is where the heart is. Seriously, who doesn't love food? Here at the Oregon Coast Culinary Institute, we are passionate about the culinary arts, and we're looking for students who are just as passionate as we are. With a 15-month intensive program, hands-on training, and individualized attention from our instructors, you could be working in the kitchen of your dreams in no time. And let's not forget the on-campus student housing. Sound enticing? Check out OCCI.net for more information and look for the Oregon Coast Culinary Institute at your local college fair this fall.
And we're back. We're talking today to Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity. And he has some books out there, which we'll link up on iSpyRadio.com. He also has a show on the Blaze TV called Economic War Room, and we'll link all of that, as I said, up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And so in terms of the Fed there, because I think the Fed scares a lot of people in terms of their iron-like grip sometimes over the economy and the effect that they can certainly have over the economy. And as we said in the last segment there, Trump is the chairman that was appointed by Trump has been steadily raising these interest rates. Do you feel that there's a valid reason to be doing that, or do you think this may be politically motivated?
Well, first, I don't believe that it's politically motivated. I don't believe it's intended to harm the president. I do believe that they were moving too rapidly in raising rates. The problem is that during the Obama administration, and this may have been political, they did not raise rates at all. And the rate increases have all happened under President Trump. But what happened was we had interest rates too low for too long. Now, the Fed's got a big challenge. Our economy is stronger than most of the economies of the rest of the world, and many of the economies of the rest of the world have gone into not-so-crazy negative interest rates. And so we're offering, 2.5 to 3% for a 10-year Treasury bond. You can go into some European countries where their economic situation is much less stable than ours, and they actually have interest rates for 10 years less than 1%. Now, any logical person would say, well, why would I give my money to Italy at that low rate when I could give it to America at a much higher rate? But the ECB, the European Central Bank, was in buying Italian bonds and government bonds and everything else that they could get their hands on, basically printing money to do so. And that result of it, it's made a very messy international economic monetary environment, and the Fed has got a real challenge in dealing with that. And they can't keep interest rates too low for too long because it causes people to make bad investment choices. If you can borrow money at 2% when you used to have to borrow, pay 5, 6, 7% for that same money, you can invest in a lot of things that may not be really good investments in the long term. It caused people to take on a lot more debt, and our federal government has taken on too much debt as a result. So the Fed's in a very bad situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've often talked about how bad the economy was under Obama. I think it says a lot that they were essentially giving away money through the Fed at such low rates, and they still couldn't get a recovery going. But in terms of the Fed, though, I know that you said that you don't think what's going on now with the Fed chairman raising the rates there is necessarily politically motivated. But the Fed itself, are there some kind of safeguards in place to prevent political motivations from creeping into the governance and decision making, or is it always completely open to politics? I mean, if they wanted to go that way.
If they wanted to go that way, there's very little that can be done. The safeguard that's put in place is the term limits on the Fed governors and the chairman and so forth. The idea is so that you can never stack the Fed one direction or another direction. Sometimes the Fed is very politically responsive and they do what the White House is demanding. Sometimes they argue for their independence. One of the problems we had is the president was complaining about the Fed, and they felt like, well, if we give the president what he wants, it'll look like we're not independent. And so they have to show their independence. So it's a very complicated and difficult position that they're in. And the whole of the system, the way that it's set up, the way that we fund our government and so forth, is really not optimal. But it is what we have, and I think the Fed was a little tone deaf, that the economies of the world were slowing, the markets were saying that there's problems ahead, and they were tone deaf with their insistence that they were going to raise rates 3 or 4 times this year. They said it last year, referring to 2019. That was tone deaf. They've adjusted that. The markets have responded, and I think we're kind of in a good, reasonably stable place at this point.
Well, I know that sometimes when I talk to people about these sorts of things, they question whether or not there even really should be a Federal Reserve anymore. I mean, Rand Paul was famous for trying to get it audited. What are your thoughts on the Fed itself? I mean, should there be an audit? Should there be a Federal Reserve?
The nature of how the Fed came about, it started as a private Jekyll Island deal. Is very screwy to me, and it's not the way a modern economy should be run. But we are where we are, and I think they're reasonable in how they're doing it. But it is completely subject to some future potential problem, and if I had my druthers, I would do another approach. But my problem is I'm not smart enough to figure out what that better approach would be.
Well, I was just going to ask you what that would be, so I guess we got that. Well, let's go and take a break there, because coming up, there's this, well, actually, it is coming, 5G and the Internet of Things. And stay tuned. We'll talk about that next with Kevin Freeman. Back. We're in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to Kevin Freeman. He's one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. He's an author and consultant to Congress, the CIA, FBI, and other government agencies on the matters of cybersecurity and financial warfare. You can find out more about him and his program, Economic War Room, at economicwarroom.com. And Kevin, before we get too tied up with in some of the discussions there, talk to us about where you air. I know that you're on Blaze TV. Are there other ways for people to watch you?
Yeah, we actually have a Facebook page that posts excerpts from each of our programs, and there's a lot of really good information that goes out from that. Everything starts at economicwarroom.com, and even on that page, we'll post some videos that that people will find fascinating, I think, and I think it'll be very helpful as they're navigating these waters of economic warfare.
Hmm. And you're on every day, or is it like once a week?
What we do is we drop videos at least one a week, and they normally come Thursday in the afternoon, and so there'll be a new episode that posts. But there's already a full, you know, 20 episodes or so out there that you can go and watch. And then some weeks we may do more than one episode, like we're doing a program on election fraud right now. I'll be visiting with a three-star Air Force general about the risks of electromagnetic pulse weapons. Anything that deals with the economics, you know, from soup to nuts, we will cover it one time or another, whether it's the stock market terminator or even the coming new cell standard, 5G.
Hmm. Well, and speaking of 5G, this is, I think, going to be one of the dominating tech aspects of 2019 coming up. I have seen some, you know, to be honest, I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to this just yet because some of the things I've been seeing were kind of outlandish, that 5G is going to poison you and your kids will grow a second head type of things. I mean, there's a lot of conspiracy theories on that. Talk to us a little bit about what exactly 5G is.
Well, you know, in its most basic form, everybody who had a original cell phone, which went in a bag and then carried in the car, you know, they understand that that's an old generation phone. And then we went
mine came with a carrier pigeon.
Yeah. Okay. and then we went to flip phones, and I remember I got my first StarTAC Motorola flip phone, and I was playing Beam Me Up Scotty with that. And then we went from that to the BlackBerry. And then we went from the BlackBerry to the first really powerful phone. And when Apple unveiled the iPhone, it was, you know, heralded by the carriers because it was the first 3G phone. And Apple showed you what you could do when you had data and how you could, you know, find a restaurant and all those things that we take for granted now were just, you know, mind-blowing back 10 years or so. Then we went from 3G, which was a very slow data transfer, to 4G, which is much faster, and you can get almost at-home internet speeds at 4G, and now you can download and watch movies and videos, and it opened up, you know, YouTube became huge from this, and Facebook and everything else. That was 4G, and that's where most people are now, 4G slash LTE, depending on your carrier. 5G is the next generation, and it's going to be 100 times faster than we're used to, and it's going to be like if you have broadband at home on a fiber optic connection, you're going to get that kind of speed throughout the city as you travel, which opens up the ability to do the Internet of Things both in your home. You can connect everything to 5G, and that means your toaster will be 5G enabled. That means your refrigerator will talk. That means everything that you in your home. But it also means that you can take that connection with you on the road, just like you take your cell phone, which means that you could have driverless cars and all kinds of things happening, which creates a beautiful, wonderful science fiction future. But it also creates a lot of huge vulnerabilities.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is like Terminator come to life here, practically, where you've got this Internet of Things, and your toaster can do stock trades for you, apparently. I mean, just all sorts of things that this could open up. Does this new world concern you at all?
Well, it absolutely concerns me, and not from the health issues, because we've been running in that band spectrum on military bases and ships and so forth for decades, and we haven't seen people grow third heads or anything.
Yet.
Not from that yet. But what it does concern me of is there's a battle right now between China and their suppliers, Huawei and ZTE, and our carriers and suppliers here. Which standard will win? Will it be beta or will it be VHS, like from the old videotape wars?
Yeah.
Beta, a lot of people believe beta was a better technology, but it didn't dominate. VHS dominated. Yep. So Panasonic wins, and they controlled that medium for a long time. If China wins here, I fear that they can put backdoors in every device that we own, and they'll have an ability just to not only spy on us, manipulate and control us, and they're winning in lots of countries around the world because they walk in and they'll say, hey, we'll fund this network for you. It's very expensive. You can't fund it. We'll fund it for you if you'll use our equipment.
Yeah.
It's the digital Belt and Road, and that's what frightens me. Mm-hmm. And we got to win that contest with U.S. standards, U.S. ingenuity, and talk people into, you know, for freedom's sake.
Sure. Well, that I think is where you really get into some terrifying aspects in terms of what China can do. I mean, if as you say, they are able to put back doors into everything, you know, it's one thing when they hack your toaster. It's quite another thing when you're driving down the road at 65 miles an hour and they hack your car. I think that's really scary. But then it gets right back to where we started on all of this, which is the hacks they could be putting into the stock market. So it's certainly a scary world ahead of us for sure. Kevin, I want to thank you so much for your time. We'll put links up to your show and to your webpage as well, the Economic War Room. Kevin, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mark.
And thank you for joining us today here on the iSpy Radio Show. We certainly hope you're at least a little wiser for having been here, including a little more intelligence on the market and what's coming so you don't fall for politicians who want to mislead you. And finances are definitely dominating the news with the government shutdown and Congress squabbling over a paltry $5.7 billion for the border wall, ignoring the fact that illegal immigrants already here cost us around $54 billion per year. $5.7 billion is about what the government spends in 4 hours. And you've got Dems like Kamala Harris out there saying, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, speaks to the true character of what our country can be, a generous country that respects and embraces those who have made the difficult journey to our shores. Well, Kamala, there's a difference between being generous and being taken advantage of. In a restaurant, leaving a good tip is generous. You're choosing to do it. Staff adding money to your bill without your knowledge simply because they think you're rich is taking advantage, not to mention it's illegal and immoral. Don't be deceived. Information is power because, as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.